The following presentation was recorded at the 2000 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Brother Miley mentioned burdens. I'd like to read a little poem here called Submission and Rest. The camel at the close of day kneels down upon the sandy plain to have his burden lifted off and rest to gain. My soul, thou too shouldst to thy knees when daylight draw to a close, and let thy master lift the load and grant repose. Else, how couldst thou tomorrow meet with all tomorrow's work and care, if thou thy burden all the night dost carry through? The camel kneels at break of day to have his guide replace the load, then gets up, then rises up anew to take the desert road. So thou shouldst kneel at morning's dawn, that God may give thee daily care, assured that he no load too great will make thee bear. Burdens are meant to be delivered, and it is proper to have a burden, but it's meant to be delivered somewhere where it's supposed to be carried. A burden is never intended to be something to live with. And so, yes, one of the metaphors of teaching would be that you are a burden bearer. That is, you have something that you must deliver, you must give. You could say that a teacher is one who has a passion to pour his life into another, or to give his life into another, or to share his life with another, or to have others see things as he sees them, and to experience things as he experiences them. And he doesn't have rest until he sees that other people begin to see things as he sees them and experiences them as he experiences them, or at least in an appropriate way from their perspective, as they can do that. And so it's restful, though, to know that we have a burden to give, and that's one of the constraints that a teacher faces. You have these children, and there's so much to teach, but you could never teach at all, and so doesn't matter how much you teach. Who's to say, since knowledge is infinite, who's to say which part of that infinite knowledge you should... And I'm not saying your knowledge is infinite, but the things of the world are infinite. And so, does it make any difference which piece of that infinity they experience, they learn? I'm not sure that matters as much as what does matter is that they realize that they're tasting of a stream, they're tasting of things that are unlimited. And so the same thing is true as I share with you here. Well, what do you share? I was thinking last evening how relaxing it is to feel that God trusts people to carry his work forward. He trusts people. I remember the interest and the excitement of being a 21-year-old going into the classroom for the first time and sitting in meetings with similar to this and hearing singing and wondering if I would ever be able to sing like that, and hearing people share. And it was exciting, and that just seems like a few years ago. It's something how God does entrust his children to people. And sometimes we might think that, well, teachers or young teachers, they just have to know this and they just have to know that. But no, really, it's the Holy Spirit who does the work through you, and he entrusts children. When parents marry and have children, he entrusts children to young people who have never had children before, and that's okay with him. He does not require years and years of experience before he entrusts children into the care of people. We have a big God who is able to achieve his purposes through inexperienced people, through limited people. That's how wonderful our God is. that he's relaxed. He's okay with that because he knows that he can work through people who, the important thing is that we're trusting him and that we recognize from where our understanding and our help comes. So don't ever think that you are constrained or limited by your lack of experience. And furthermore, don't ever think that you are guaranteed success or stood in good stead by your wealth of experience. It's possible to have years of experience and wonder whether you know anything and wonder whether you will be able to enter this new year with anything to offer. It's the Lord, not the experience, that counts. And so, yes, I have a burden this morning. I'm going to proceed to try to deliver it here. And you can pick up some if you would like. Let's begin this morning by looking at the characteristics of 15 to 17-year-olds. Now, there may be a few of you here who were not here yesterday and don't have that sheet. If you don't, raise your hand. There's a sheet. It's in the back of the sheet that says 12 to 14-year-olds. I see there are a couple back there. Titus, did you see that they get? Hold your hands up so I can see how many there are. Well, just give me 20, but the rest up. Hold your hands up and he'll give them to you. These are the high school age children. Senior high, 10, 11, and 12. These people basically are growing up physically, but they may act grown up emotionally, and they may possibly may not act grown up emotionally. Don't be deceived into thinking that the emotional and the social growth, especially the emotional, matches the physical growth. And so don't be indignant with these people if they don't act grown up the whole way through. That's okay. They're still growing. Again, they like to eat. That's fine. They may eat, although it's good to eat things like, things that will build good habits and good character. And these are people who like to experiment with forbidden things, with the drug or the cigarette or the whatever. This is a time to remind them that the body is a temple. The body is a sanctified temple. It's a temple in which God lives. And just as you would not want to drink a cup of water if somebody dropped one eyedropper of something filthy in that, neither should you want to be in a body in which there is one drop of filth. And so that desire to maintain a pure and a healthy body, because of rules or laws, but because they should look at that as the temple on which God lives and wants to live. This is a time when physical habits are formed. Habits they may live with in terms of exercise. We live in a day when there are very few occupations that require adequate exercise to stay healthy, and so we really must do something if we want to maintain reasonable health in terms of exercise, walking, running, jogging, whatever, working. Mental. Yes, he actually does know more than his parents know in many ways, especially temporarily. If he's studying physics and chemistry, and these things are fresh in his mind, he's going to know quite a bit more than his parents do in many ways in terms of knowledge. But stretch him and realize that, help him recognize that everybody has his strengths and his limits. Help him recognize that experience tempers knowledge with understanding and wisdom. And knowledge, it's fine, it's wonderful to have knowledge, but there are many kinds of experiential knowledge that only come with living. And that there's no way to get that without actually living. So there is a continual learning, and there is a settled kind of knowledge that adults have that they will never have until they become adults, because you simply have to live it to experience it. So they need to appreciate that fact that there's more to come. Yes, he wants a reason for everything. This is a time now when he knows his Bible characters, he knows his heroes, he has looked up to these characteristics. He knows, and everybody really can be great. Do you know that? You can be great. You also want to be noble and great. Greatness does not consist of comparing yourself to other people, but greatness consists of doing what you can. Finding whatever your hand finds to do, doing it with your might, doing it unto the Lord. And so that's behind him now, if he's been trained and taught with responsibility and good stewardship by his teachers. Now is the time, and the parents, now is the time for him to actually think about the reasons. Now is the time for him to think about some doctrinal kinds of things, reasons why we do these things. Help him answer his own questions. Help him seek answers to his own questions. Everyone needs to find answers to questions. Not to all the questions there are, but to the questions that he has. And he should be able to face them and honestly answer them. He has a longer memory span, so he may not need the review that some younger children need. He tends to remember ideas, and so that is, he might prefer the big picture rather than the specifics. But encourage him to be accurate in his memory, because it does little good to have the big idea if you can't back it up, if you can't give specific reasons, specific examples for why you believe and why you think what you do. These opinion polls we hear about these days are not opinion polls. There is no way that a person's opinion can change in a week or two. If it changes that fast, it was not an opinion. It was simply a feeling, like they say, a gut-level reaction. An opinion is really a reasoned opinion, and a person who has an opinion has reasons for his opinion. And two people can have quite different opinions, and they can share the reasons for it. I think this way because this, 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 and this. And the other says, I think that way because that, 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 and that. And the one says, I understand where you're coming from. I think you have good reasons for your opinion, but I don't share your opinion. I don't come out the same way you do. And that's what you call having an opinion. And they ought to have reasons for opinions that they have. And so encourage them to not just have ideas, but also to be able to back them up. And that goes right along with arguing and debating. You need to have content to your thoughts, not just feelings. Teach them to reason clearly. And of course, teach them that reasoning is only part of it. As I said the other day, one of the most reasonable things that was ever done between the lids of the Bible was Eve eating the fruit. Hardly anything that was more reasonable than that, and I don't know if there's anything that was more devastating than that. So reason can really get you in trouble. He's idealistic. Give him some ideas, or give him some opportunity to try some of those ideals, to plan some activities, to do some writing. Yes, he misjudges time. Well, hold him to some standards, hold him to some deadlines. I like to call them lifelines rather than deadlines. When you meet that, why you live. We don't want them to die. He wonders about the future. Help him see some of those possibilities about the future. He does have a future, and it's getting closer, if there is such a thing. And help him see those possibilities and responsibilities. And don't burden these people with all the downsides of the current events, that the world's coming apart at the seams. The world was coming apart at the seams ever since Eve did that reasonable thing. And the quantity is greater now, but there is hope. And the fact is, and the wonderful thing is, that the darker the world, the brighter the lights can shine. There is hope. He's very influenced by suggestions from his own group. And so, If you can somehow make your suggestions through the group, have somehow the group adopt the suggestions, the ideas that you would like to see put into practice, and have the group adopt them rather than working necessarily on the individual. And socially, he sees himself as belonging to a small group. He needs to be encouraged to welcome newcomers, to welcome newcomers and to think of the other. It's a good time to learn the meaning of ethnocentrism and parochialism and realizing that there are others. Maybe get some other people to visit in your school or somehow have them rub shoulders with some other people, whether they are other nationalities, other faiths or whatever. They need to learn that others are much more alike than they might think they are. He does like some responsibility, make sure that he has some opportunity to do that. They're attracted to the opposite sex. Make sure that there's plenty of opportunity. Now, you can't, not this is in general now, in school you only can do a certain amount of this, but generally they should have many, many kinds of opportunities to relate to the group socially for many kinds of social activity. And so that they can learn to know one another in many different contexts, in terms of working together, playing together, singing together, hearing each other read, playing kinds of games in which some get frustrated and others don't, other kinds of games when the other people get frustrated and the others don't. You ought to see the people whom you know in your social group, you ought to have opportunity to see them in many different kinds of situations. And so if you're planning any social activities for youth over time, make sure there's good variety. Volleyball brings out one kind of thing, and that's wonderful. Other kinds of activities bring out other kinds of things, and as you do these many kinds of things, whether they are board games, activities that you have to plan, where people do show and tell, whatever, there are many opportunities to learn to know people in many different contexts and ways. He does want social approval, and encourage him to seek God's approval. That really is the approval that you want. And if you really have God's approval, the other things will fall in place. Keep challenging with that verse that as Jesus grew, he grew in favor with God and with man. That's good for any child to hold up before him, but especially as you come into your manhood and womanhood. And teach him that Christ will help overcome the temptations that he faces, even now. Christ will not give up on you. He never does. He will never become disillusioned because he never had an illusion. I'll remember that one for a while. He's trying to find a place in society. Well, help him to find a place in God's will. That really is the first and foremost concern, because finding the will of God and thinking about some of the things that Michael shared with us the other evening about how the primary thing is to delight in the Lord, and then when you delight in the Lord, he gives you the desires of your heart. And that's exciting to realize that if really your heart beats with God's heart, then you can follow the desires of your heart. So the primary thing is to delight in the Lord, to find your place in God's will. He wants to help others. Give him some opportunity to show kindness to others outside the group. It's time to start thinking about missions, close home, far away. I just saw a little brochure, I believe it was down stairs here. Apparently there's some group down our way who has a group of young people that have some kind of a organization that helps other people in the community. I'd never heard of it before, but they drive people to pick up prescriptions, take them to the doctor, do little errands, mow the lawns, and a variety of things. There are, if these people have energy and are creative, there are all kinds of things that can be done in the neighborhood, helping with food banks, whatever. It helps them to look out. You don't have to wait until you go off to Timbuktu to do mission work. It's probably more effective, because when you get to Timbuktu, really what you do there is going to be exactly what you should be doing back home. And if you don't do it around home, you probably won't be very effective in Timbuktu. His emotions are very intense and fluctuating, and don't try to keep them even. That is, it's okay to grow, but point to the fact that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and always. Christ is stable. He is okay with you. He loves you. And he is the same. There is, in fact, stability in the world. This is a wonderful time to learn that there are absolute promises to stand on. There's a hymn that talks about standing on the promises of God. And this is a time to examine those bedrock assumptions, those bedrock items of faith, that Jesus loves me, and that, in fact, it does you good to have some of those things. I carry some of those. I have a running list of promises here that I add to sometimes, and it does you good to read over those and see whether you're putting them into, whether you're standing on them. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what you will, and it shall be done unto you. The joy of the Lord is your strength. Now you come up with your own list of promises, and when you need something to stand on, check that list out. When the enemy shall come in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord shall lift up his standard against him. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. There are scores of promises in the Bible that are ours. They're gifts for us to absolutely stand on. They need to learn some of these and take them as their personal promises. He may keep his feelings to himself. And, well, help him to gain his confidence and encourage him to share with somebody. Every man, they say, needs at least one other person whom you can call at 2 o'clock in the morning without having to do too much explaining if necessary to share your heart with, even though you don't do that often. Maybe never do it. There ought to be somebody whom you know well enough that you could do that. And every woman, I think, needs a couple friends whom you can just talk with. Doesn't matter really what the subject is, as long as you can talk. And so they need to be able to experience that with someone to share, because one of the easiest temptations to fall into, or one of the easiest ploys of the evil one, is to simply have you sit on your troubles and keep them to yourself. And there's a wonderful release that comes through opening up and sharing and confessing. He wants security, and show him that, yes, we do need security. And that's what God gives you. Security is in God. He also wants a thrill. And this is a time to, they say, avoid merely emotional appeals for dedication to Christ and salvation. It's possible to get people to emotionally only to respond. But as we're going to live for God, we need to take the whole thing along. We're going to have to serve Him with all our soul and heart and mind and strength. And so I'm not saying don't appeal to the emotions, but we want to use them all. And so there's something to think about and something to put our heart into here. So avoid taking advantage of the emotions unduly. Although it's very important, though, to include the emotions. Otherwise, we're not being whole. We're not being real. And so there is definitely, we want to include that very important part of us in our teaching, too. And since these people they intensely want to care about something, it's very important that as we work with the high school age, that the things that we study about are worth caring about. Because if they aren't worth a 17-year-old to care about, why, he's probably not going to be very interested in using his mind to study it either. Spiritually, his religion starts to become very personal in the sense that it means something to him. That is, he begins to see that the Bible and God and all this is actually very personal. And it becomes more than a system of belief, more than a way of believing things. And in fact, if it doesn't, well, then he's just well on the way to becoming a formalist in the way he believes. And what happens sometimes is that these young people grow up and they adopt these belief systems and these practice structures of their parents and those about them, but it never becomes personal to them. And then
when they start having their genuine personal doubts and having personal experiences, why somehow they have difficulty connecting their personal feelings and their personal thoughts with these things that they've been hearing and learning all over the years. As one man said, it almost seems that he was immunized as he grew up in a Christian setting. It's almost more difficult for these young people who grow up in well balanced settings to actually see, to get a perspective on the faith of their fathers. And there is no such thing as a grandchild in the kingdom of God. There has to be a child. And so each one needs to wrestle with some things himself, and this needs to come to birth in his own life. His religion is one of action. He wants to do something, and so it's a good time to have some responsibility, some things to do. Teach him the meaning of dedication, what it means to dedicate your heart, your mind, your life to serving, to service. It's also time to teach that being is more important than doing. And so, yes, but doing nevertheless is important, because you can't be without doing and you can't do without being. He's old enough to think about these things. And he does have many doubts, and that's okay. It's okay to have doubts, because that's a sign that things are starting to become personal to you. You might raise a question, but it's really just a question. You know, we have academic questions. Academic questions. Let's see now. Does heaven have material existence or not? This is three-dimensional. Now, is there gravity in heaven? So if you go up, is there gravity in the center? There are all kinds of academic questions you could ask. You could talk all day about Jesus. And, well, now let's see. Did he love Judas as much as he did Peter? And all these things can be discussed at quite some length. But that can be done intellectually, academically, and there's a place for that kind of thing to some extent in some ways. However, this person gets to an age that he starts to have genuine questions, not a logical question. He has a heart question. And his heart question is something like this. They say, Jesus loves me. How do I know that? Does he really? How do I know that? And this thing that he might have believed for, or knew, he knew for 20 years, 15 years. Now all of a sudden he wants, how do I know that? Do I know that? And how do I know it? And is there such a thing as being able to know what the will of God is? Or should I be a member of a church? Or should I finish school? And he starts to have some genuine, absolute, personal questions that are not answered academically. You cannot answer those questions by giving him a sentence, by having him recite a creed. He is going to have to find out for real for himself. And he's going to have a personal encounter with Jesus Christ. And that's something that we are inclined as teachers and as adults to stand by and say, we have to give him the answer. And you can't. You can't give it to somebody. Absolutely not. And you have to refrain from trying to. You cannot help the butterfly out of his chrysalis. You cannot birth somebody. It's the work of God. And yes, you can encourage, you can love, and you can model, you can pray, you can stand by, you can give counsel, you can teach, but you can't do it for them. And so, but it's wonderful to see this happen, because God is faithfully working in this young person's life, and he will be faithful in doing what he does if we're faithful in doing our part. So it's a time that we need to encourage him and think in terms of being faithful on our part as stewards in teaching and encouraging and allowing God in his own good time. The wheels of God grind slowly. They also, these things grow slowly, but when it's done, then it's done. And when a person comes to a personal faith and you know that he's grappled through it himself with God, there's nothing quite like seeing that happen. Because you know it's something that a man did not do. And you know, if you can change one of these young person's life by saying the right words and pushing the right buttons. Somebody else can change it also by saying some other words and pushing other buttons when he goes down the street. And so you don't really want to get these people to just say the right things and do the right things. You want God to do the work. And then when that person comes to faith, you know that there's something solid. He's on a rock. And he has a relationship. And it doesn't matter if you're around him or not. You know that because In fact, you're almost, you can feel secure. If you're not around, you know he's walking with the Lord, and he's more able to help that young person than you are. And so, yes, it's wonderful when people get to this age. You know, when Ted Tripp says in his book, in Shepherding a Child's Heart, that the work of parenting actually comes to a conclusion. It actually does get finished. There is such a thing as being finished. Now you always, and as a teacher, the same thing happens when these children graduate. Your work is finished. It's done. It is finished. And, of course, there are other children coming on for you to teach. But there is a conclusion to it. There is closure to this thing. And the closure is a kind of finishing that isn't just that the tank's full, but it's something much more exciting than that. It's that the person has found a living, dynamic relationship, and he's alive and going on his own. And so finally, he appreciates reverence, and the important thing is to be an example. Be an example of reverence. There's a time to be reverence, to be reverent. And we live in a great day of informality, and that has its place. It's nice not to be stuffy in your relationships. However, it's nice also to recognize that in times when you come into the presence of God, like the writer in Ecclesiastes says, keep your foot when you go into the house of God. It's not a time to just approach God as though he's a buddy. It's a time to learn that God is, yes, he loves you, and he's so special and so holy that in times of worship and devotion, he calls for a special atmosphere. Yes, so we've looked at the ages, and they are all wonderful ages, and each one is most important, the one you're looking at. It's like they ask the mother, which child do you love the most? Well, the one who's sick, the one who needs the attention. So whichever one you're working with, whichever age you're working with at the moment, that's the special one. And whichever subject you're teaching at the moment, that's the special one, because All of them deal with God's creation, and God is God, and everything that he's made is very special. So we can't look at anything and study anything without touching. As they say in the Old Testament, you can't cut it anywhere without it bleeding. That is, Christ is the whole way through it. So it doesn't matter if you're studying Deuteronomy or you're studying Malachi, Christ is there. And the same thing is true. As we study God's world, everywhere we look, we see him. And so every area is special. I'd like to think this morning for a few moments about motivation. Motivation. The root of that word, it does you some good to consider roots. It has to do with motive. And motive has to do with moving. Movement. Movement. My father had an expression that he used. He said, get a move on. I thought that was kind of a fascinating expression to say it that way, but he had opportunity to say that a number of times as we grew up, and somehow we had to get some activity here, get something stirred up. I believe one of the writers, Paul or Peter, one of them talked about stirring up your pure mind by way of remembrance, you know, get some agitation going here. And how do we motivate? How do we get people to move, whether it's physically and more, we think more in terms of mental agitation. Well, there is agitation, and then there's bad movement and there's good movement. You can get movement, but not necessarily the kind you want. But I'd like to think maybe first I'll approach this a bit backwards. And I would think, I'd like to talk a little bit first about boredom. How would that be? Boredom. Well, let's have a little learning experience here. And to do this, how about we all stand up? We'll feel a little bit more energetic that way. And we're going to do a little memory work here. Memory is good for your mind. It's good for your mind. And, okay, excuse me. Before we start that, let me make this announcement right now. All right, people who ordered tapes, think about that at break time when we dismiss why you can pick them up right at the break time. All right, now, it'll do us good to, it's good activity for your mind to memorize, to stretch your mind a bit. And so we're going to say this out loud with some good energy, see if we can memorize this list. Here we go. Let's go. All together. Kef, lak, mil, ner, vek, lun, nem, beb, sar, fif. Okay, now this side. Here we go. Kef, lak, mil, ner, vek, lun, nem, beb, sar, fif. This side. Kef, lak, mil, ner, vek, lun, nem, beb, sar, fif. Now, all the men. Kef, lak, mil, ner, vek, lun, nem, beb, sar, fif. All the girls.
Kef, lak, mil, ner, vek, lun, nem, beb, sar, fif.
All right, now, let's try from the bottom up, all together. Fif, sar, beb, nem,
lun, vek, ner, mil,
lak, kef. All right, now. That should be enough time. Let's try saying it together. Ready? Kef, lak, mil. You may be seated. It does help you when you memorize something to put some energy into it. You see, get some pep here. Doesn't that make it easier? Let's try another list here. All right, you may stay seated this time. Let's try this, all right? Cat, fan, sit, hid, pen, dab, rub, hid, see, fan. Again, cat, fan, sit, hid, pen, dab, rub, hid, see, fan. Cat, fan, sit, hid, pen, dab, rub, hid, see, fan. Let's see how well you can do. Ready? Cat, fan. Well, we're part way there. Let's try this one. All right, now this is going to be a little harder because the words are longer. All right, let's try this. Coat, sweater, hat, gloves,
vest, shirt, socks, shoes, jacket, pants.
Again.
Coat, sweater, hat, gloves, vest, shirt, socks, shoes, jacket, pants.
Doesn't that rhythm help you a little bit? Let's try it again.
Coat, sweater, hat, gloves, vest, shirt, socks, shoes, jacket, pants.
Shout it. Coat, sweater, hat,
gloves, vest, shirt, socks, shoes, jacket, pants.
All right, let's try it. Ready? Go.
Coat, sweater, hat, gloves, vest, shirt, socks, shoes, jacket, pants.
Good, you're learning. All right, practice helps out. All right, now, this next one has a real big word in it, so I'm not sure how this will work, but let's try it. Ready? Let's go.
Okay. And my boy went to the grocery store to buy candy.
Okay.
And my boy went to the grocery store to buy candy.
Backwards.
Candy buy to store grocery the two went boy A.
Okay. Once again, forward.
And my boy went to the grocery store to buy candy.
Very good. You're learning. You're learning. Well, why did we learn so fast? See, I told you it helps, it builds up your mind as you practice memorizing. Now, if we try that again and go from the right to the left, we could probably progress too, couldn't we? Like we did. Would the first one be easier? Well, I'm not sure. It would. I think you get the point of that one anyway. Now, I've been thinking about boredom. Somebody needs to write a book sometime about boredom. And I didn't hear that word used nearly as much 20 years ago as I do now. And I'm wondering why it's used more. The word interest is an interesting word. If you look at what interest is, I'd like to check out the etymology of words. Inter has to do with coming between, like interstate, interplanetary. And est is really from the Latin root, the French, Spanish, you recognize the A. Est means is. And it between is. And something, if something interests you or something's interesting, why somehow there's something between you and it that ties you together, that ties you together. If something has no interest to you, why there's no connection between you and it. And so if I tell you that somewhere hanging on a wash line in China are three eders, that really doesn't interest you that much because it doesn't mean anything to you, has nothing to do with anything in your life, and you're not even sure what eders are. And so you would just as soon not clutter your mind with that information. It has no substance at all to you. And so if there's no connection between what is presented to you and to your life, such as there probably wasn't between that first list I gave you, you wonder, hey, what is this? Why should I exercise my energy to... In fact, if I do put this in my mind, I'll probably have some clutter there, right? That oughtn't to be there. And so what happens is that... if you don't have, it causes a weariness. Boredom results in a weariness and a restlessness. And it has to do with things that are unrelated to you or to each other, things that are disconnected, things that are meaningless. And if you can't somehow tie things together that they make sense, at least to each other, or to you, to your experience, whatever, it's weary, it's difficult. Try to memorize something in a foreign language that you memorize a verse of a hymn in a language that you cannot speak and see what the experience is like. If you work hard enough at it, you can recite it, but if you have no idea what it means, it's a painful experience. All right. And a couple things that cause boredom are things that are exceedingly simple. If I spent the morning giving you lessons on recognizing words, pile up flashcards with the addition facts to you, 3 plus 2, 4 minus 1, and so on, and I've worked with you all morning on that, I can guarantee you that your behavior would not be what it is now. You would not be sitting there with interest, taking notes. Some of you would start to roll your eyes. Some of you would start to do other things if you might leave. Because, hey, this is too simple. This is not worth my time. So something that's too simple. Something that's already known. Something that's already known, or if it's predictable. If it can be predicted. And we say, if a person is going to talk to you, and you could, before that person starts speaking, you know, some people are very good at impersonating other people. And there are those of you who could come up here and impersonate me very well. We would all laugh. But what I'm saying is this. If one of your students would be able to, in your absence, so you don't show up someday, one of your students would be able to go up there and go through the class with about 90% accuracy of what you would do if you were there. What I mean by that is, for example, we read a history lesson, and the student walks up and says, "Now, boys and girls, take out your books and the papers that you wrote your answers to, and let's go over these questions. All right, now, Johnny, would you read your answer for question number one?" And then Johnny reads his answer. "All right, well, that was very good, Johnny. Now, Susie, would you read the answer to question number two?" And so she reads that. "Well, that wasn't quite right, Susie. You should have had 5 in this. All right. If a student would be able to predict about what you're going to say, would actually be able to take your place and say about what you're going to say, there's a problem there, you know? There has to be routine. But they should not be able to say what you're going to say. That is, if the things that you, if your content Not your style. Your style may be predictable, but the content. And I used the illustration a number of times that the UPS analogy. UPS trucks are brown. They all sound about the same. And the men all look about the same. They're dressed about the same. They have this, pretty much the same motions when they move. In fact, they're very closely controlled. They have people go with them to make sure they are the same. And so you can tell when the truck pulls in and stops, and boom, the door goes open, and man hops out and walks in with a brown box. And all brown boxes look the same. And as you sign for it and they leave. But you know, we don't get bored with UPS trucks coming. For some reason, we usually don't get bored. When that box comes and they sit it down there and you sign for it, a person doesn't usually say, oh my, another brown box. No. Why not? Why not? Well, if they always brought the same thing, now that would be a different story. If every brown box had 1,000 peanuts and 3 dictionaries in it, then we would get bored. Because, oh, another box of dictionaries. But the fact is that you do not know what the content is. It might be something you ordered. It might not be. They're even bringing junk packages now. But at any rate, it's the content that you find interesting. And in fact, the routine of the truck, the routines almost accentuate the content. That is, if you, as a teacher, if you think that you have to come up with a new method every day, one day you stand on your desk to teach, and the other day, next day you bring in a stool, the next day you sit under the desk. If you try to come up with a different way every day, that would be tiresome. Oh, couldn't you just stand there and talk to us for a change? Because it's the content. It's what you have to say that must not be predictable. All right. Boredom also is, these are things, if you want to bore your students, why, make sure the things that you give to them don't make any sense. Make sure they cannot connect them with other things that they already know. Don't tell them the meaning of anything. Make sure it's simple. They already know most of it. Make sure that they have a pretty good idea exactly what you're going to do for the next 3 weeks. And don't give them any freedom at all within the structure. That is, they should never have any choice of what assignment to do or how long to write it or what they should read. If you have to read a book report, do a book report, be sure you pick the book for them. Tell them how many pages to read per day and when it has to be done. And you do all these things and you can be sure that they will be bored. Make sure they're confused. Don't give them clear directions. If they wonder, really, oh, am I supposed to do this for tomorrow or is this for next week? Make sure that everything you do is pretty much the same. Same kinds of things. Every assignment has 10 questions, and each one requires one sentence answer. All right? Standard. Make sure that you don't include any feeling in when you talk. Because if you change your voice and put some feeling into it, they might be distracted, you see. They're supposed to think about what you say. They're supposed to think about what you say. They're supposed to use logic. And logic is rational. And if you get feelings involved, you cannot think clearly. Make sure that they have times of frustration. Now, the frustration won't be caused because things are too easy. You are going to give them easy things to do. The frustration will be because you don't explain how they're to do it, or when, or what page it's on, or something like that. But frustration is a... And then, last of all, impersonal work. Be sure that they never have opportunity to write anything about themselves or put themselves into anything that they do. Keep everything that they do at arm's length out here somehow. You do these things and you're sure to have bored students. People who are restless. People who are ready to get out of this place. All right? Those are some things that contribute to boredom. Now, that's really not what we want. At least, I don't. Let's look at the other side of the coin here, at that motivation. If you're motivated, you're moved. And I alluded yesterday to the fact that in the Bible you can do studies of moved. It talks about people being moved with envy, moved with fear. Noah, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the to the saving of his house, it says. Excuse me a moment here. Okay, yes. let me give you a few other motivators in Scripture. In Psalm 68, it says that the mountain of Sinai was moved at the presence of God when God's presence came down. The mountain actually moved. And in Matthew 9:36, Jesus was moved with compassion when he saw the multitudes. It moved him to feed them. And it's interesting that we actually can move God. He's touched, it says, with the feeling of our infirmities. And the disciples were moved with indignation when two of them asked for a special favor, for a special position in the kingdom. The patriarchs, it says, they were moved with envy and they sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites. And then in Acts 17, the Jews were moved with envy and they incited others to rebel against the apostles. Noah was moved with fear and built an ark. And the prophecy, it says, prophecies came as holy men of God were moved by the Holy Ghost. And so we have to consider, when we think of motivation, what is it that will move somebody? And in school, of course, we don't see, students are motivated to do something. They're motivated to do things that we don't like them to do sometimes. And so we don't want them to be moved with envy, moved with the right, wrong kind of fear. And so we have to consider the big picture of what will motivate them to do the right kinds of things, what will move them. Perhaps there's another passage in Acts 20:24. This is taken out of context, but Paul says, "None of these move me." And as I looked at that verse, I thought, I'm afraid that's how students feel sometimes with whatever we try to do in the classroom. Well, none of these things move me. Now, Paul said that in the context. He said, "I'm told that prison and bonds and persecution, they await me in the future." But he said, "None of these things move me," and I go right on. And so, all right, what are some sources of motivation, some good sources of motivation in school? Do you notice, I like to call your attention to the, when I had you memorize this list, what did I do with the first list to try to motivate you a bit? What did I do? What did I have you do? Stand up, sure, that helps. Put some action into it. What else? What else did we do with that first list? Forwards and backwards. Yeah, we went forwards and backwards. I mean, we got some action here. Forwards and backwards. What else? Different groups, sure. Boys and then the girls, and then all together, and then louder. Do all these things. These things, but what's the limitation of that kind of motivation? There was something critical missing. What was missing? Could you say that again?
There was no interest in the list.
But are you sure? It was real loud. What were you going to say? Oh, there was meaning missing. Okay, it didn't mean anything. And so, yes, in fact, what I had you do is just fine. You may have people do something like that sometimes. You may have them talk out. Talk out. Say things together or stand up or whatever. But my friends, those little methods that you use, what about them? I could have pulled out a sheaf of money here and given you each a $10 bill and said, okay, whoever can say this now, that might have motivated you. But people will do most anything if you offer them enough candy or whatever. But the problem was the meaning of the thing. And so these other little things can help. They can help. But you will never, they do not really motivate you. Don't try to motivate somebody to do something that's not worthwhile doing. but there's no purpose to it. All right. So activity actually is one of the sources of motivation, though. Activity. If there actually is something to do, there's not much point in moving if there's no movement needed. All right? And people are energized if there's activity to do. Now, it takes other things too, but activity itself does help. It is, in fact, kind of different to get out of your seat and walk up to the chalkboard, just itself, doing something or writing something. And if you're sitting there for a while and they say, teacher says, all right, now I'd like you to take a piece of paper and get ready. I'm going to ask you something. All right, well, there's something to do. And the more time that you expect students to simply sit there and listen, the easier it will be to lose them. Another one is to have material that is engaging. Engaging. I like that word. It's related to the use of the word contact I used the other day, how Jesus established contact. Somehow you need to engage, come into contact with the mind. So what do you engage? Well, you engage their previous knowledge, their experience that they've had in or out of school, or the understanding that they already have. And you need to make sure that you need to help them make the contact. You see, they might not make it if you don't make it. And so you might say something like, well, you've been out in a thunderstorm already. You heard a thunderstorm, and you heard that lightning crack and the boom. And then you might even tell about an experience you yourself had. I had an experience myself going for the cows one afternoon, and the dog went along. He was about as far away from me as Wanda was back there. And the lightning bolt struck, and I recoiled by backing away from it, but the dog put his tail between his legs and went the other way. He believed it was behind him, I think, or he wouldn't have gone that way. And now, you know something about lightning and striking. Now, we can then understand a little bit about what it was like when Martin Luther was in a storm and he was scared for his life. And he said, St. Anne, I believe it was, he said, save me. If you save me this time, I will serve you, God. And somehow, if you want to really have someone feel or think how important something was in some item in history or science, you see, you could say Martin Luther dedicated anew his life to serve God one time as he went through a storm. Well, all right. He did. But to realize the intense feeling that was associated with that, you might, and of course, depending on the age of the student, just to call their attention to think a little bit of how you felt when lightning struck, and now you're ready to feel how Martin Luther might have felt. So somehow encourage them to reach in to their memory, the past experience, the past feelings, hold that kind of in the one hand, and then you give them something new that you want to say, and they can tie those things together. Engage them. Another one is personal interest. Personal interest. If there's any way that, if this person himself is interested in the subject previously, if a person loves to collect stones and has a stone collection, and you're talking about rocks and minerals, you can expect from that individual more interest than some other students are going to have. Or sometimes you can call upon an individual student whom you know knows something about a subject and is interested in the subject, and that's where it helps for you to know your students. And if you're discussing something, you can call upon him or her to share something or to say something or to answer a kind of question that draws upon his experience and gives opportunity to share with the class, and that helps. Another one is adventure. Adventure does not necessarily mean walking out of the classroom. That is, it doesn't mean activity, leaving the room. It means an adventure. In fact, an adventure is really primarily an adventure in the mind or the heart or the spirit. And even if you're out walking somewhere that you've never been before, it isn't the walking, it isn't the bodily activity that's really the adventure. It's the experience that you're having as a person. And so you can have all kinds of adventures. And in the first year of our school in 1984, there was a man visited who had been a missionary in Japan for about 20 years, and he told about life in Japan. And I can remember some of the things he said that day as clear as if they had been said yesterday. And one of the things specifically he told about was and the Christians did these practices too, was their funeral customs and their cremation and how the family gathers together and how this is a special experience for them. He went into some detail there. And that was, in a sense, an adventure because it was a different experience for everybody who listened, a different time, a different place. And something that's adventurous is something that takes you out of your comfort zone a little bit, takes you out of your categories of previous experience. And so, in a sense, that's a contrast to the engaging. And it's okay. It's good to have some adventure. You don't want your life to be all adventure because it would become too scary. You would have no stability. But there are times that whether it's somebody speaking to you, whether it's something you share with them, whether it's something you read. And in fact, some books, literary anthologies are called adventures in literature, because as you read, you actually have an adventure with the people in the stories. Reading a story is an adventure. And that's, in fact, why many books are so interesting to read, because you really don't know who's going to do what and how it's going to happen. So think, is there anything adventurous about our subject here? And then another one is owning something, possessions. A person is motivated if something is his. There's something about that. If we say, now I have up here, I have 15 books, 15 copies of this book. Let me say first, I don't. All right, so don't get your hopes up. But if I say, I have 15 copies of this book up here, the first 15 people up here after a break time will get them. There's certain of you that would feel this little drive to get your copy if you could. Well, now, it's okay to own some things. Now, we're not talking here about materialism, but the idea of something, of making something yours. And, of course, one of the most profound things that we own is our faith in God. That is your personal faith that you have, more or less of. And so you own something in the sense of really knowing it. That is mine. If you can recite a poem, it's yours. It's yours. If you've developed something, if you come into a school, into a classroom to teach, and you're told, here are the books you use, these are the assignments you give, and this is how you do things, and you need to somehow fit yourself into this thing 100%. There's no option for you to decide anything. You're going to have a little struggle. Now, you could do it, but you'd have to look through that material and look through it and look through it and think through this and try to make it yours so that it can come from you. So that instead of you saying, well, let's see here, we need to do this next and this next, you can say it can actually come from you. Now, from the student's perspective, there are occasionally they can plan something, and I'm not suggesting at all that you have a, quote, child-centered room where they decide everything they're going to do. But occasionally they can plan something, whether it's picking a game or whether it's a modification or some type of assignment or something that they plan or a project that they do. If there's something that he has some opportunity to help to develop or to pick, if it's maybe a science project or some other kind of project, and he actually feels that this, and that's one of the things you want to get students to adopt this as mine. Yeah, this is something that I want to do, even though you might suggest. And that is one of those soft things that's hard to put into words, but to feel that, to adopt this as something that I want to do. Any comments on that? Any questions? What have I been trying to say, Wendell? About owning. Mm-hmm. Yes, and in terms of doing schoolwork, if it's not just something that, well, teacher said I have to do the next six problems, so I'll do the next six problems. Now, let me hasten to say that students are not going to feel this way about everything that they do, certainly not. But they ought to have some experiences that they will find purpose in doing this work, and when the job is finished, here it is. This is my story that I wrote. This is my opinion. This is my poem. This is my offering, and it's mine. And it's come from me. I've done it. I put my best into it, and we pass it in. It's really mine. All right. Another one that's a bit related to that is control and choice. If I have any sense of control over things. And so, well, of course, that goes to maybe having a desk to keep my things in. That's my desk. And it's interesting. School is a good place to experience a communal kind of living. A good place to make the point that the books that you have, they're yours, but they aren't yours. That is, they're owned by the school or by the parents, whoever. But this book is assigned to you to use for the year. So it's your book, and yet it isn't your book. And that, by the way, is a good analogy for our bodies and our lives. They're yours, but they aren't yours. They really belong to God, but they're yours, and you're responsible for them. You'll be responsible for them. So anyway, some control, some choice. And you don't have to burden yourself to think of all different ways to give children a chance to choose things. And you can confuse a person by giving them too many choices and saying, well, you may do the odds or the evens, or if you want to, you can do the first half, you can do the last half, or you can do some of this kind, some of that. No, and that's confusing to give too many choices. Sometimes they'll tell, well, just please tell us what to do. And so don't overdo these things, but these are kinds of things to think about. Some opportunity for some choice and some control over, for example, when something is worked on or maybe how it's done. And here's a major one, exercise of abilities. If a person has opportunity to use his or her ability, that is exciting. And so if you enjoy writing, you enjoy singing, you enjoy planning something, whatever kind of thing you enjoy, and if you can actually do that as an assignment, wow. And that's really what life amounts to. See, when you grow up and you get into the work world and you find the right kind of work, you find out that people will actually pay you. Now, you don't want to say this too loud because you don't want to let them know perhaps how much you enjoy it. But they'll actually pay you to do what you enjoy doing. Do you mean to tell me somebody would pay me to stand at market and sell things? Well, I just love to stand at market. Children play store, don't they? It's fun to play store. And do you mean to tell me that somebody would pay me to play store all my life? Yeah, actually, they would do that. And so that's really what grown-up life amounts to. earning your living by doing that which your heart just enjoys doing in terms of everyday work. And so think of this, folks. Somehow, if we can think of the abilities the children have and call upon those abilities, at least in as much of our schoolwork as we can. And of course, you balance this against, and there's always a balance in these things, you balance this against the discipline of doing something structured that is hard work. And that has its place too. But exercising your abilities. And of course, that's the very next one, a challenge. Don't be deceived. A challenge is very motivating. A few challenges that look almost impossible, but yet if they can see how it can possibly be done. And by the way, a time when a challenge isn't a challenge is when there's no way they can see how it could be done. If you can't imagine how it could be done, it's not a challenge. It's an impossibility. So if I said, your assignment for tomorrow is to write a book, have it published, and then be ready to distribute it tomorrow, they'd say, yeah, sure, you got to be kidding. I mean, there's no way you could do that. But on the other hand, if you say that, we're just starting the last quarter here, and if you have your memory done by the end of next week for the quarter, why, we'll do something different instead of memory period. Well, I'm not suggesting you ought to do that, but a challenge that it would actually be possible to do it. And then the person may count the cost, and some will say, yeah, I'm going to do it. Others will count the cost and say, well, no, I'm not. But a challenge is a motivator. And then another one is the unknown, the mystery. And that's one of the intriguing things that interests us about the Bible and God and the world. Great is the mystery of godliness. There's mystery. There's much we can know, but for all that we know, there's so much more that we can never know, and we know that we'll never know, and that's wonderful, and that's all right. And so the unknown, we move towards it and we learn more about it, but we know there's still more there. And so this comes out in stories. It's related to the idea of adventure, and I'm not talking about mystery stories here per se, but the mysterious. There's something. You see, we don't want them to go for the forbidden fruit, but there's something about the unknown, about the paper bag that has something in it. You set it up there, and you say, now there's something in here. But I used that as when our school was new some years ago, and we had a little meeting before it started. I carried a paper bag up there with some things in it that rattled and set it on the stand. Talked a little about this, the new school going, and pointed out that there are many, many things to learn. And these things you learn as you go along the way. And then the bag was to illustrate there are many things. And I didn't take anything out of the bag. I didn't ever tell anybody what was in there. And some people afterward wondered what was in that bag. And I said, well, that's the kind of thing we'll find out through the years of the school, you see. That's why you come to school. You find out these things one by one. And so there's that. When something is in there, you go, what is in there? Wow, wouldn't you like to know? And maybe it was just, I don't even remember what it was. But the unknown. And of course, that's related to curiosity. And so this mystery, the unknown, and children, there is curiosity, and we don't have to be artificial to try to work with that. It is there, but try to work with what the children bring with them to school. If they come to school with curiosity, give them an opportunity to use that. That is, work with what you have, that can be a motivation. And another one, curiously enough, is responsibility. A person who is not responsible for anything really doesn't feel too much purpose. It really doesn't make any difference whether I'm here or not. Did you ever think how you would feel if nobody in the world cared whether you got up in the morning or not? if nobody missed you, nobody knew you, nobody really cared or not whether you stay home or go, it really would be very, very lonely and disconnected. And so to be given some responsibility somehow, you can think of routine things students can do or responsibilities to bring something in, to show something, whatever, and if somebody's responsible for something and doesn't come through, why then whatever's supposed to happen the next day can't happen the way it's supposed to happen because the goods weren't brought in from home or the thing wasn't prepared or whatever. And, of course, in school, that just means that the lesson plans need to change a bit. But then it can be pointed out that there are other times that if you miss your responsibility, why you, it really has big impact. All right, and some variety. Variety is a spice, not the main dish. Variety is good, but you wouldn't want to eat a whole meal of spices or even dessert. But to do some things in some different ways sometimes is good. Another motivator is to include some feeling. You ought to feel, contrary to what I said when we talked about boredom. And by the way, this is somewhat relative. You need to know who you are as a person. And so if you're constantly bouncing back and forth across the room and jumping, waving your arms and so on because you want to put your feelings into your work, that will get old. That will get tiresome. And then when you really want to put a feeling in, what would you do then? What could you do? You're already at... It's like writing with exclamation points after every sentence. What are you going to do when you really come to a sentence that you want to use? Well, then you use two or three. But these people who write at the top of the voices, you can't make effect. So this is somewhat, you can be very low key. Some people are that way as you speak. But somehow there are ways of, as you speak, showing feeling. And also, just as you work with students, let them know that you care, and if you don't, in all of these things, by the way, probably the number one thing is for you to apply them to your own self as a teacher first. If you do not, if you give an assignment, and this assignment is not yours, that is, the only reason you gave it is because these questions are at the end of the story. And so, boys and girls, there are 7 questions at the end of the story. I'd like you to answer them for tomorrow. If you might not even know what the questions are because you didn't look at them. They're not your questions. It's not your assignment, my friends. You did not give the assignment. You simply called their attention to somebody else's questions and said, you do somebody else's work there because they wrote it. Now, what am I saying? I'm not saying that you need to rewrite all those questions, but when you give an assignment, you should at least look over this thing and see what it is. And one of the reproaches on the teacher is if a student comes and says, how do you do number 7? You look at it and say, oh, I didn't know that was in there. We didn't study that. I guess you can skip number 7. All right. You didn't give that assignment. That didn't come from you. You didn't own that assignment. You simply had them do somebody else's work. And how do you expect them to care? How are they going to feel if they come and they say, oh, well, if you didn't know that was in there, whose assignment was this? So in all these things, you need to make sure that you cultivate your own exercising of your own ability. Use your abilities, and these things will then come through. More is caught than taught. And some freedom and opportunity. Some freedom and opportunity. And within, this goes along with freedom and opportunity, within structures and routines, that is, within time periods, within normal routines of a day, occasionally some freedom and some opportunity, which that's kind of a general statement. You want routines. It's very important to have them established. If you don't establish them, the children will find out where they are. You know, how loud can we get before you will say something? May we do this? May we do that? Sharpen pencils during class or whatever. They will find these things out if you don't tell them. But you have your routines, and then you have a certain amount of that. And that really provides freedom. Do you know that without routines, there is no such thing as freedom? There's only chaos and and there's no structure at all. Another one, by the way, that's very important is success. Some people claim there's nothing so motivating as success. If a person is able, in fact, to do what he's supposed to do, that is very motivating. And there's hardly anything that frustrates as much as, or kills motivation as much as always being frustrated and not being able to do it. I jotted a couple more in my paper here since I did the overhead. Another one is imagination. If the person has opportunity to use his imagination as part of his work, that's very motivating. And again, you need to use your imagination in giving assignments. And your imagination comes into play in such ways as, oh, here's a skill they need to practice. How shall they best practice this skill? What kind of activity would give them opportunity to do that? And another great motivator that should be near the top of the list is being loved and being liked. And those are related, but somewhat different. If you're loved, why, the person who works with you, your teacher, does what the teacher needs to do. The teacher helps, the teacher explains, the teacher meets you, the teacher greets you, the teacher says hello, the teacher asks questions of you, is impartial with you, does all the things a loving person will do. And in addition to that, the teacher actually likes you. Now, it's possible to obey the command of loving, as we are to do, and still not have an affectionate liking. People are really different, and it's, to put it very bluntly, we feel most comfortable with those people who are more like ourselves, usually. And so if you have the opportunity of eating lunch with some person whose language you cannot speak, you never met before, and you have to eat lunch beside them, you really are not going to be able to communicate with that person. I'm using the extreme here. You're more likely to sit with someone whom you can communicate with. But when you're going to work with people all year in a classroom, you want to also cultivate a like for those children, that you actually like being with them, that it feels comfortable and feels good and feels pleasant to be around them. And one other that you might add that we've alluded to different times is somehow purpose and meaning, seeing purpose or meaning in the assignment. And the first step in a student seeing any purpose or any meaning in the assignment is for you as a teacher to sense that this assignment is purposeful. Now, sometimes our purpose is that they need something to do, and there's some work here in this page for them to do, and so that's the purpose for the assignment. But it's far better to have a better purpose than that, to really know that, yes, in fact, this exercise on this page will give them the needed practice in this particular kind of skill. And so that's why we have them do it. So as you look over this list, you want to look at it two ways. First of all, look at it as yourself, as a teacher, as an individual. Am I actively involved in my teaching? Am I, in fact, is my mind in gear? Is my in my work that I do? And am I engaged? Does this somehow have anything to do with my previous knowledge and experience? Or is my life outside of school completely separate and has nothing to do with my work here? Am I interested in it? Do I have any sense of adventure at all as I approach the classroom? Do I really own the work? Is it mine? And you don't have to develop all your own questions and your own tests. You can use other ones, but you've got to look at them and make sure that these actually are, as you see it, worthwhile activities, and you can see the purpose in them. And do I, in fact, exercise any kind of control or choice in the kinds of things I have students do? Am I exercising my abilities? Am I meeting a challenge? Is it a challenge to teach? Is it a challenge to motivate students? Meet the challenge. Is there any mystery, any unknown? Is there anything that happens this year where I'm going to push back some walls a bit and maybe do some things or experience some things or learn some things that I do not now know? Do you expect to learn anything this year that you don't already know? If you don't, can you expect your children to? They learn from learners best. Now, you don't need to tell them, boys and girls, I'm going to learn more this year than you. That's not what I'm saying. But you need to have that. You learn from a learner. Learn from a learner. And are you curious about anything, about life? Do you have a sense of responsibility and enjoy it? And do you appreciate or have any variety in your own life? Are you affectionate? Do you care? How much do you care? And do you yourself in your own life have the structure and the routines down that, and you know, routines and structures are so wonderful. Habits are wonderful because they give you a freedom to then focus on the things that need to be done. If you had to figure out every morning how to tie your shoes, which way you're going to tie them, will I use a weaver's knot, square knot, granny knot, what will I use today? And with each thing I do, am I going to brush the right side of my teeth, the left side of the teeth? And if you didn't have any routines, imagine how much energy and time that would take to get through a day. And you wouldn't have time left and energy left to get on with the real things in life. And so that's the wonder about some of these routines that you have. And that's why we have these routines. That's why we have form. That's the value of formalism. The book needs to be written about that too. Because you get some of these big questions out of the way, and then you can get on with the real content. And so in your own teaching. And then are you experiencing success? Are you using your imagination at all? And do you love, do you like, and do you see purpose and meaning in it? And let me tell you, that is the number one thing to do. You go down that list and you ask yourself, do I do these things in my teaching? If you do, I could almost say that your work of motivating students is done. I'm not sure what the percentage is, but that's the biggest part of it. That's the biggest part of it. Because they will pick up quite a bit. And they will pick up some of it from you, but when you act out of that kind of motivation, then you will have ideas to give them direction, and they will take the direction from you. All right, we will take a break till about 10:30. And let me read this reminder again that people who order tapes can pick up the tapes after the morning session.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.